Hello and welcome to the Foot Health Show here on UK Health Radio, your global real feel-good radio station. My name is Peter Alton of Circle Podiatry.
And my name is Jonathan Brocklehurst. It's our aim to raise your awareness of just how important your feet are, to give you the solutions to your foot and leg problems, and to teach you how to prevent future issues.
So grab a cuppa, relax, sit back and put your feet up and enjoy learning about the one part of your body that often gets forgotten. That's right, it's your feet.
Thank you for listening to the Foot Health Show on UK Health Radio. My name is Jonathan Brocklehurst, and today we will be exploring a topic that shows us just how important our feet are. This show is all about the significance of our foot health in our everyday lives, the decisions we make, and the information we read and listen to relating to our foot health can be a beacon to others. And that is why the Foot Health Show exists, to inform you of inspiring and innovative ways to address our feet and mobility in the current world.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltz know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltz, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltz, life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
We are grateful for the support the show receives from across the world. And if you are interested and feel this show matches your vision for shedding light on the importance of our foot health in enhancing our lives and preventing limb loss across the globe, please refer to the UK Health Radio website with details on sponsorship and donations.
Thank you.
That was a lovely piece of music. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. And now we're about to go into our interview with our very special guest today. And if you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Foot Health Show on UK Health Radio. And to be in touch with us, please do go and visit the UK Health Radio website, where you can find all content here from the Foot Health Show. So without any further ado, here's our interview with our very special guest. Today's very special guest is Professor Mike Sachs, who is Emeritus Professor at the University of Suffolk and Visiting Professor at the University of Lincoln, the University of Westminster and United Kingdom, and the University of Toronto in Canada. He was previously Visiting Professor at the Royal Veterinary College, University of London, Plymouth Marjon University and the University of Essex in the UK. In 2018, he became Honorary Senior Advisor on the Leadership to the United Nations and co-founder of the UN-endorsed Institute for Responsible Leadership, which he currently chairs. He is at present an appointed member of and only UK representative on the World Health Organization Technical Expert Group on Global Health Practitioner Regulation, a crucial agenda for both the WHO and the UN. He is a current fellow of the Institute of Directors, the Institute of Knowledge Exchange, the Research Council for Complementary Medicine, and the Royal Society of Arts. Internationally, he was until recently president of the International Sociological Association Research Committee on Professional Groups, and is the present vice president of the ISA Research Committee on Health and a board member of several top international journals, including the Journal of Professions and Organization, Oxford University Press. He also has a strong enterprise profile as a member of the Innovation Council, along with chief executives of major multinational corporations. In addition, he has been a chair member of many National Health Service and Health Committees at all levels, covering areas from the changing healthcare workforce to research and development. He has previously advised both professions and governments internationally on health and other matters, most recently producing the commissioned Sachs Report in 2021, charting a strategic direction for the Royal College of Podiatry in the UK. Mike Sachs received his PhD in sociology from the London School of Economics in 1986, where he also taught. He has held a university chair since 1992. He was previously provost and chief executive at University Campus Suffolk, deputy vice-chancellor at the University of Lincoln, and Dean of Faculty of Health and Community Studies at De Montfort University, after contributing extensively to the schools of business, law, public administration, and social sciences there. He is a current board member at Rose Bruford College of Theatre and Performance in London, having earlier served on the executive of the University of Essex and University of East Anglia in the UK. His successful career in universities has included receiving Times Higher Education Awards for Widening Participation University of the Year and Outstanding Leadership and Management Team of the Year. During his career, he has published over 100 high-profile journal articles, chapters on health, professions, regulation, and research methods, as well as more than 20 edited and single-authored books on these subjects with top publishers, including Routledge and Sage. He is series co-editor with Policy Press, Bristol University Press, on the sociology of health professions, future international developments. He has given keynote presentations at conferences in dozens of countries, ranging from Argentina, Australia, and Azerbaijan to Italy, Japan, and South Africa, as well as addressing diplomats and ambassadors at the UN in Geneva. He has participated in funded research with partners spanning from the Russian Academy of Sciences in Moscow to the University of Toronto in Canada, where he received the Best Brains Exchange Award in 2014 from Health Canada and the Canadian Institutes of Health Research. Recent invited global activities include visiting roles at the University of California in the United States and Wuhan University in China, as well as being a member of the Advisory Council of the School of Creative Arts in Ghana. Welcome, Professor Mike Sachs. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Foot Health Show on UK Health Radio. First of all, how are you doing?
Yes, no, good. It's my pleasure to be here, and I'm looking forward to some interesting and perhaps challenging questions.
Yes, and in fact, in your book, Support Workers and the Health Professions in International Perspective, was a book actually that really caught my attention because it happens to be relating to a line of work that I'm in at the moment, but also that seems to be extremely current to in the world that we live in and to the current workforce, which is the role of support workers. And in the book, you talk extensively and also several authors and contributors within the book mention about the importance of the support workforce, both in the UK and abroad. Specifically looking at UK for the most part, but we'll bring in a little bit about abroad as well. One of the things I noticed was the importance of the information and stimulation of debate about issues in the sociology of health professions. That's something that the book definitely mentions. And I just wanted to bring you in here, Professor, about what it was that inspired you to edit this book, to be involved in, and to write this book too.
Right. Well, that's a very interesting question. I think that I first became interested in this field, particularly of support workers per se, in about 2000, so about 20-odd years ago, when the UK Department of Health actually commissioned me to do the first study of health support workers in the UK. And this led to a 100,000-word report. It was very extensive, which included a whole range of methodologies and still remains actually the most systematic study of health support workers in the UK, notwithstanding the Cavendish report, which emerged in 2013. And I think when I got involved in this commission piece of work as the lead, the principal researcher, it really stimulated my interest, because what I became aware of was that health support workers are by far the largest single deliverers of healthcare, face-to-face, not only in the UK, but also in most other parts of the world. And so we found in the study that at the time there were 1.5 million health support workers, as compared with a quarter of a million doctors and 600,000 nurses. And it gives you some idea of how significant this workforce is. And one of the things that I really would like to draw to listeners' attention is that in terms of the title of my book, Support Workers and the Health Professions in International Perspective, the subtitle is The Invisible Providers of Healthcare. And support workers, although they're so significant, are really invisible, and people really acknowledge them. And there was a report that came out in 2000, actually, on the workforce in the health service, a major government report. And it didn't mention health support workers at all. It was all about, the allied health professions and so on and so forth. And this really made me feel that this was a cause celebre. And I have been researching the profession since, I hate to say it, the 1970s. When I began my PhD at the LSE. And so I was interested also in the reciprocal relationship between qualified and statutorily registered health support workers in the UK and professions in the UK and the health support labour force. Very fascinating question. And then when I spread my wings with this book, and I have been doing a lot of work with the University of Toronto, where I hold a visiting chair, it became apparent that similar situations, in terms of the invisibility of this labour force and the significance of them, with a growing ageing population with multiple health conditions, chronic conditions and so on, it made it really appear central to be focusing on this area as a critical one for the future. Particularly in times where finances are limited, where, we're working in a way that needs to be sort of more cost effective and so on. And so this, for me, is a cause celebre, in terms of the future, not only of our health service, but also of countries like Japan, Brazil, Australia, Canada, Portugal, the Netherlands, the UK, Sweden, all of which are covered in the book, which have very similar dilemmas in the neoliberal world in dealing with health support workers and how they're regulated and how we support them in their work and how we move forward from a policy perspective and indeed from a perspective which relates to more solid state qualified health practitioners at degree and level and above.
Absolutely. Well, that's you know, fantastic synopsis of the book. And actually, one of the things that I really found inspiring too was this quote actually in the editor's overview. It says, "The need to give more attention to health support workers in light of their growing importance in working with health professions." And it goes on to say about how this is important with the interface with the health professions and the face-to-face care that's involved, and how they're ultimately critical providers of healthcare globally. And I quote from the introduction. So it really does bring to life the significance of the support workforce. Now, one key example that I really want to focus on in this interview is the role of foot health professionals. They're essentially a support workforce that is a precursor to the podiatry profession. And there is this perception, I think, widespread perception, particularly amongst podiatrists who've trained, say, a few decades ago, that there is this idea that foot health professionals almost are superfluous to requirements and not necessarily as important as they are. And this is the issue, I think, that we're faced within not just the health professions world, but also in terms of patients accessing care and knowing who to trust and who to and who to go to for certain treatments, and this understanding of a remit between a foot health professional and a podiatrist, for example. And so one of the things that fascinated me in the book was the idea that there are allied health professionals with limited jurisdiction, I quote, and also the idea that they're, like you said in the subtitle, the relatively invisible workers that play such a key role in prevention for things such as you know, being able to spot signs of early diagnoses, such as peripheral arterial disease, or noticing perhaps, you know, suggestion of a foot ulcer, in which case, you know, the referral system can kick in quite quickly. So that was something I wanted to get your thoughts on, really, in terms of foot health professionals. How important do you think they could be going forward into the next few years and decade?
Well, I think, to be honest, they're going to be vital. I mean, we only have at any one time, if I just talk about the UK, you know, something like 10 to 15,000 podiatrists, you know, qualified podiatrists. Who are they? Are the health professions in this area? And I think that one of the issues with podiatry, amongst many, and you know that I'm also the author of the Sachs report, which was a report that was commissioned back in 2000 to actually look at the strategic development of podiatry as a profession. One of the big issues with podiatry is that it has been difficult to recruit to NHS commission numbers. And it seems to me that there are great opportunities for creating a kind of skills escalator in which the foot practitioners on the high street and elsewhere are able to graduate, if you like, to fully fledged podiatry professionals, to, you know, if you like, swell the numbers of a group which is declining, if anything, you know, particularly with growing numbers of retirements and other things, which is not only retiring, but in my report, I noted that podiatry was a very significant profession, particularly in terms of its potential to become a first contact profession, which you know, GPs are under huge pressure. Everyone knows that, I think, or as any part of the UK in which they're practicing. And certainly if professional podiatrists became a first contact profession, which I think would be wholly warranted in terms of my observations about the area, then there will be even more pressure on the relatively small ranks of podiatrists. And I think that the critical thing in many ways is that the practitioners who are support workers in this area, and this includes podiatry assistants, but it also includes the whole swathe of practitioners, you know, and 60% of the practitioners are in the private sector. It also includes all these. There is a definite policy imperative to ensure that they are properly trained, to ensure they're properly supervised, and they have proper career opportunities to progress. And I think this resolves a number of different dilemmas. However, in terms of the relationship between the profession of podiatry or chiropody and the support workers, there are some dilemmas, because I think in some societies globally, it has been possible for cognate groups to increase their status by incorporating support workers in the division of labour.
Right.
And they've done this by delegating what might be seen as dirty work, you know, if you like, some of the work which is preparation for more complex interventions and so on. But on the other hand, there are bodies of people, including within podiatry in this country, who may feel threatened, and they may feel that this will increase the competition from outside the fold. And so actually resolving these dilemmas and ensuring that everyone benefits and we get a win-win relationship is absolutely critical to moving this field forward.
Absolutely. And I completely agree with you. It does sound like there's been a schism to some extent between podiatry and foot health professionals. And my current role now is a lecturer and podiatrist with the SME Institute, is now involving training up that workforce of foot health professionals. With my experience as a podiatrist and diabetes specialist in the NHS, I've seen the progression and the changes that go on within the podiatry profession. But in terms of actually producing a workforce that is definitely willing and ready to go, that understands that delicate remit change between the work of a podiatrist and a foot health professional, and getting that clear boundary in place, obviously is a difficult thing to do, particularly if those grey areas between, for example, dressings of ulcers on the foot, that particular area in terms of the type of dressing that's used tends to be a bit of a hard-fought battle between the two as to whether or which dressing to use. And something that I'm trying to bring into this is the use of a hypoallergenic dressing that is effectively a barrier dressing, with this idea of a clean dress refer for the foot health professionals, so that there's that understanding within the training to becoming a foot health professional that we're part of this really important chain of multidisciplinary workforces that effectively provide this conglomerate really for overall holistic care for a patient. And that's where I believe the future can really start to produce results without the arguments, as it were, between the two professions at the moment. And one of the other aspects of the book that I think was really important to point out today was how statutory registers do not generally exist. And I quote, because this is the area that I think may be causing, and I wanted to get your views on this and experience on how these statutory registers could be perhaps brought in for foot health professionals to be able to mitigate this ongoing issue, I think, that seems to separate and almost take away from the importance of this multidisciplinary step-by-step process for a patient's overall foot care.
Yes, I mean, I think you're right, Jonathan, and obviously doing some good work from the technical side in terms of bridging what might be seen to be a divide. I think that the big issue here really is that I know in the UK, this is a much wider issue than podiatry, because the government hasn't been inclined to actually create registers, not professional registers, but registers which may contain information, for example, like references, underwritten, you know, checked, validated qualifications and so on, so that people in their own homes, in the hospital sector, in the community sector, can actually make a judgment call about, you know, who they actually interface with in terms of what might be called a bit like the Wild West out there, you know, with a kind of relatively unregulated sector. Because with registers not existing at this current point in time, there is always the danger of charlatanism and basically a threat to the health of the patient and the health of the client, which, you know, obviously we need to do everything we can to try and avert. And this relates not just to, you know, we need to have, you know, some information, we need to be able, people in their own homes need to be able to cross-check who is actually entering their personal domain to receive any treatment or any preparation for treatment. But it goes further than this, because it's also important that there is continuing professional development, and there are staged educational kind of landmarks that this group can go through. It could be certification. It doesn't have to be a fully degree level gradation. But people can engage in enhancement, and they can get support from their employers to actually move forward. And one of the things that has really made this even more important than it ever was before is that the NHS has increasingly, because of the shortage of resources and other factors, focused in the foot health area very much on complex cases.
Yes.
And, you know, very much, you know, cases which require, as a matter of urgency, some attention. And it means that, you know, people with low level or moderate level foot conditions may need to go into the private sector. They may not, you know, given that relationships between the NHS and the private sector are quite extensively not charted, they may need to find someone who can minister their needs outside of the state sector. And this is why we do need to ensure that there is an appropriate regulatory framework. This could be state regulatory, but it could also be tightening up on the provisions that employers make and using employers more proactively in terms of sifting those who are involved. But of course, we need to recognise that a lot of these foot health practitioners are also operating independently. So arguably, we need something more than that.
Absolutely. I think that, again, I think, like you said, it's making sure that there isn't that sort of charlatanism and the almost going rogue without that evidence base. And there's quite a bit of emphasis now in the podiatry world about the importance of an evidence base, particularly in the degrees in which students train up to become a podiatrist. However, I think something that, you know, I'm hoping to bring in more into the foot health professional world is to think about having an evidence-based rationale rather than almost reliance or an over-reliance on anecdotal evidence, being, of course, you know, a lot of experience can help, but at the same time, being able to supplement that with the current evidence that's out there and being able to digest it in a manageable way, because, of course, there's so much of it nowadays.
I think that, you know, Jonathan, I mean, your involvement in the university sector, universities are a key player in all this, because in universities, we're very familiar with prior experiential learning, with, you know, being able to allow people to come and go at particular stages of their progression through the educational hierarchy, as it were. And I think that universities can play a key part. And one of the one of the issues for me is also that in my work with the strategic committee for podiatry, it was very evident that a lot more work could be done on apprenticeships as well. And yes. I think that, you know, with support workers, apprenticeships could be a key to moving forward. But we currently have in the UK, the only apprenticeship route is actually in England, not in the other countries of the UK. And I think that the wings could be spread not only in England, but I think also even more extensively in the other parts of the UK. And I think this will be really helpful, and it will bring podiatry more in line with other professional groups, particularly in the health area. And so this is, I think, another development that I will very much encourage in terms of the future. And I think that if podiatry can actually, you know, really move forward, if it can expand its scope of practice so that it's not just restricted to the foot, there'll be even greater demand for podiatry.
Yes.
And not just from podiatrists, but from a devolved integrated workforce in the support sector.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that when you've got the different settings that podiatrists can work in, such as the community, the hospital, residential, other institutional settings, as mentioned in the book, it's very much a case of being able to understand the scope of practice that podiatrists can have, and often we almost limit ourselves to the idea that we can do general podiatry, this idea of general podiatry, the nails and corns, callus, and that's about it as far as it's interpreted to some extent. But actually realizing, you know, there's vascular podiatry, there's forensic podiatry, even, you know, we can go further and we can look at musculoskeletal podiatry. And I think that mindset of understanding, you know, pushing the boundaries of where we can go with it, I think is so, so key to establishing best practice and accommodating all of the, you know, enormous variety of conditions that the NHS clearly shows us that we're experiencing from patients, particularly now coming out of the pandemic. And I wanted to touch on this a little bit as well, because I know that was the pandemic has actually, seemingly anyway, revealed a demographic of patients who would have been seen as low or moderate risk as a classification in the NHS, but now are seen as higher risk because they've not been able to access treatment and healthcare. And as a result, their conditions have exacerbated, but worse, they've not had the treatment and education as well, which is so key and so important, even in those 5 minutes with a healthcare professional, and they've missed those 5 minutes. And so that's something that I've noticed recently with the amount of referrals going on as well. And that's just from the foot health professionals referring onto the podiatrist. I'm not even sure how that may have increased further from podiatrists to consultants, vascular surgeons, etc. So my question to you, really, Mike, was to kind of to understand a bit more about what you think the pandemic may have effectively pushed us into in terms of the support workforce, and how key it's going to be to mobilise that workforce to meet the demands.
Well, I think you're certainly right, Jonathan, you know, to say that there is this difficult issue which is faced by all health professionals, not least in the allied health field, of actually balancing out the increased demand we're experiencing post-pandemic with supply. And this goes right back full circle to the start of the interview, that the supply of podiatrists is not as great as it perhaps should be. You know, there is, you know, even within the NHS, there's more actual pressure to have more podiatrists and to meet NHS commission numbers. And I think that the pandemic has highlighted the gaps, you know, in terms of face-to-face care, which can be provided by the support workers in a devolved structure. During the pandemic, of course, I mean, I do think that there are positives. It's not just the revolver of the pandemic has held back care, because it has it in some ways, but on the other hand, it's opened up a system of telecommunications, video conferencing with qualified professionals. which is a great sort of, if you like, it's a time-conserving technique from the professional side. It actually enables more people to be seen, but at the same time, it's a, you know, a limited prejudice of the quality of the interaction. And I think this has been a major benefit of the pandemic. But on the other hand, I think, as you say, it's a question of getting this balance right. In the pandemic, it obviously wasn't right because there was a great aversion to individual practitioners, whether qualified or not, actually seeing clients and patients. And this led to some imbalance of care. And one of the things that I personally fear is that when we see research on the consequences of the pandemic, the biggest killer may not be COVID-19, but it may be those patients who maybe have various types of carcinoma and something, or some other serious condition, who may have been sidelined to some extent by the fact that they haven't been getting the face-to-face care that maybe they needed for further diagnosis and treatment. And we've still to see the research on that, actually. And I think it will be very interesting to see what, if you like, the effects of the displaced care have been. But now we have a situation in, you know, if you like, post-pandemic to some extent, we have a situation where we can now push the boat out a little bit within existing resources if we can recruit support workers to work with fully fledged health professionals. We can actually make care more available rather than less available, even in a situation where it doesn't look at the present point in time politically that there are going to be vast swathes of funds for the NHS.
Yes, absolutely. And I think exactly like you're saying, is that, you know, almost making the relationship between the different workforces is almost symbiotic in effect, and that they're working for the benefit of each other, as it were, so that communication, you know, is reinforced rather than held back. And I think, you know, like you've mentioned, I think the use of modern technology, the telecommunication, the speed and the agility in which we can actually distribute that information now is incredible. Not least, I think, also important for patients who may be in remote communities. I suppose across the world, this is, I suppose, particularly relevant in areas like the outback in Australia, perhaps remote farming communities. I'm thinking of sort of rural Somerset and others as well in the UK, who just, you know, in terms of access and public health, public services, transport is going to be a little bit more tricky. So absolutely, I definitely echo the importance of that and how the pandemic has, I suppose, provided that opportunity or increased that you know, knowledge in that sense. So absolutely, yes. But it's very, very fascinating. And actually, to listeners who are listening in today to the Foot Health Show, if you're interested and want to read further, then the book is called Support Workers and the Health Professions in International Perspective, with the subtitle of The Invisible Providers of Healthcare, which has been edited by Mike Sachs. So I'm just very, very grateful, Professor Mike Sachs, to for your involvement today and for your knowledge, and also for enlightening us with the importance of the support workers and workforce that's going to be effectively creating a new era of healthcare for our future.
Well, thank you very much, Jonathan. I really appreciate the opportunity. And one of the things I'd just like to say to underline, you know, the points that you've made, is that this is actually the first academic book, to my knowledge, on health support workers. There are lots of, you know, this is how you do it, this is how you treat pressure sores and other things. But this is the one that actually takes a helicopter view internationally in terms of moving forward. And I'd just like to add one thing, if I may, and that is that, as you will know, I also I'm working very closely at the moment with the World Health Organization, casting, you know, generating essentially global health practitioner regulation. And this actually includes not only doctors, dentists, podiatrists, but also includes support workers as well. And it is looking at a worldwide framework, worldwide guidelines. And these are very close to emerging. But one of the things that I can say from my experience with the group and looking at also lower middle income countries and not just the more affluent, you know, Western neoliberal societies, yes, is that it has become very apparent that people with, you know, short periods of training and so on can be very competent in very specific areas of care. And that would apply to podiatry too, even just a few weeks training, providing they're appropriately supervised and, you know, they're appropriately, if you like, reined in terms of what they can do and so on. And I think one of the issues we have in our society in the UK more generally is that we overtrain people for the tasks they actually carry out. We have a situation where people are more competent, you know, with, you know, 1 or 2 years training in the, you know, in the support worker function than perhaps they're given credit for by more, you know, the more professionalized workforce. And I just think we maybe just need to, let me use a phrase, let it all hang out and actually judge competence and regulate competence so that we can get the full potential of the whole labour force. And this includes ensuring that qualified podiatrists have even more opportunities to become things like podiatric surgeons, you know, dealing with various specialisms in podiatry. And I think this can be a really win-win situation for all the players in this division of labour. And so maybe I should just end on that note.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much, Professor Mike Sachs. I really appreciate that. And for me, that message really rings true. And I'm sure for all our listeners here today, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We are grateful for the support the show receives from across the world. And if you're interested and feel this show matches your vision for shedding light on the importance of our foot health in enhancing our lives and preventing limb loss across the globe, please refer to the UK Health Radio website with details on sponsorship and donations.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltzer know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltzer, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltzer. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Vibration, that's the message. Let us try. Thank you for listening to the Foot Health Show on UK Health Radio. My name is Jonathan Brocklehurst, and today we have been exploring a topic that shows us just how important our feet are. This show is all about the significance of our foot health in our everyday lives, and the decisions that we make and the information we read and listen to relating to our foot health can be a beacon to others. That is why the Foot Health Show exists, to inform you of inspiring and innovative ways to address our feet and mobility in the current world. I look forward to you listening in and tuning in again next time.
Well, that's all we've got time for this week, folks. Thank you so much for joining me here on the Foot Health Show on UK Health Radio, your global, real, feel-good radio station. All that remains is for me to say, have a fantastic week. Keep safe, keep those legs and feet moving, and don't forget to tune in again with your friends next week.